We're with Doris Kearns Goodwin here on The Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell, of course, is here. It is tempting to say yabbits with all of this. Yabbit. I couldn't be like that because he was great. Yabbit. He had this great life force. Yabbit, yabbit, yabbit. There is an ordinariness about him. For all that he comes through the fire and is in fact a diamond from the coal that gets compressed, part of why he is appealing. And in the same, even more so than Andrew Jackson, who is said to be the other people's president. But there's something very commonplace, in the best sense of the word, that isn't bigger than life, that's just a guy who sets a course and makes more of himself than he might have been. It doesn't just want the big car. You were saying that earlier, but isn't it important to say this isn't just a bigger than life guy? It's also a guy.
No, I think you're right. In fact, I think his story, the reason it's so emotional to us, even as young children, we read about him somehow at candlelight in that log cabin trying to read late at night. It connects to that fact that in this country, what we seem to promise our people, but it doesn't always get realized, is that if you have talent, that somehow you'll be able, unlike England at the time where you're stuck in a station when you're born, you'll be able to rise to the level where your talent can take you. And Lincoln was worried as a young person whether that would ever happen for him. He was haunted by the idea that there was some poem about a villager in an unmarked grave who had talent but had never been able to realize it. And when I think about the responsibility of our country to people in poverty or people who don't have opportunity, I mean, I think that's what Lincoln would be out fighting for today, for everybody to have the story like him. You can't go further than your discipline and your talent, but you should be able to rise that far. And he thought government's responsibility was to lift those artificial weights from ordinary people so they could go wherever they could be taken.
And not simply aggrandize those at the very top.
Right. You just move where you can go, given your talent.
There are... Bill?
Well, in that context, and I want to leave it unsaid, he'd lost almost all of his elections.
Right. I mean, that, you know, people have told me that some people have on their desks a memo about all of Lincoln's losses because it makes them feel like if somebody was running for the state legislature and he'd lost the first time. So he said he put that up there. When he runs again, he'll think, yes, I can do it.
And again.
And again.
And again.
And again. Exactly.
This is the Winston Churchill never give up. It is important to say that this is a book about Lincoln, and it's also a book about the other people from whom we can also take big lessons if we choose to do so. Those were interesting guys to hang out with, too, weren't they?
Oh, I'll tell you, Seward was the one that I really fell for.
Well, and most of us think, yeah, Seward's Icebox, Alaska, and
exactly,
a subject.
Exactly. But he was a man of huge, wonderful appetites. I mean, he reminded me of Churchill in a lot of ways. Mm. I think every man was jealous of the idea that Churchill could drink so much, smoke so much, and live until 90. And here was Seward, a similar kind of person. He loved to outdrink, outsmoke everyone, played cards, had dinner parties in the 1850s where the Southerners would be together with the Northerners and so much wine was served. They said everyone was mellow by the end and hugging one another. But more importantly, he had a largeness of heart. He was very smart. But once he came to understand that Lincoln was somebody unlike anyone he had met before, to create that closeness between the two. And then, of course, when I absorbed, which I hadn't at the beginning, that he was the target of the assassination plot that night, too, and a bloody massacre took place in his house, and he almost died as well. Those two friends coming to that dramatic moment at the same night and almost suffering the same fate.
It's also, to me, a wonderful story. Almost all of the cabinet in various ways, of it's a tribute to Lincoln and his political skills and his human skills, but it's also a tribute to those individuals, almost all of them, were better people, much better people, at the end of their service in that cabinet than they were when they went in.
That is so true. And, you know, he gave them the platform to work their way into history, and they deserved to be remembered by history. I mean, Stanton, you know, earlier in his life didn't think that he could be in public service because he needed to make a lot of money because a lot of people in his family had died and he had to support them. And he felt like he'd given something up, but yet he pushed ahead becoming wealthy. And yet Lincoln gives him this opportunity to be Secretary of War, and he'll be remembered forever.
And he was brilliant.
And he was brilliant at it. He did an extraordinary job. And Blair, as Postmaster General, would have probably never, we wouldn't know his name, but he became and was able to create a postal system which gave the soldiers great morale. And even Chase, you know, who is a priggish character.
A challenge. A real challenge.
Yeah. He's the foil for Lincoln because he's so unlike him, you know, unable to tell a joke, you know, correctly. He reminds me, somebody said that President Nixon used to actually write out conversations that he would have with people the next day. And the same thing, Chase goes home at night and he's practicing jokes that he can't deliver the next day somehow. But even he did a good job as Secretary of the Treasury. So, and Bates did a good job as Attorney General. So they all had their chance to be remembered by history because Lincoln gave the opportunity, but because they did well with it.
You said these pictures coming out of that era, and we do have photographs because the photographic process had been invented by then, and Matthew Brady went out, and there are some wonderful images. It isn't just that you had to hold still to have your picture taken. You reminded me, elegantly, of course, of how pervasive, never mind the war, death is in this entire culture. And then you add this 600,000 dead people in the mid, and it touched everybody. So the theme of death through all of this as part of life, and also its worth, its lack of worth, the fact that Lincoln finally gets folks to understand that if you're black and dead, you're just as dead, and your blood is just as red. This, the theme of death that is all through this is much more than just the war, and the war is a very important part of it.
No, you're so right. I mean, in families, what you'll see are parents bearing children, which is something that we don't often see in today's world. And that had to turn upside down the whole natural progression of a life, in a certain sense. I mean, Bates, they had 17 children, Bates and his wife, and nine of them lived. So that was actually a pretty good percentage. But Stanton lost his first wife. Chase loses three young wives. And Stanton never got over the loss of that first wife and his child. Chase lost several children. Every family in this story suffered a loss of a child. And not just a child born prematurely, but a child who was 9 or 10 or 5 or 6.
And that's before all of those children massacred on the battlefields.
Exactly. So in a certain sense, though, that loss in their personal lives must have made them more empathetic toward the other families who were being broken apart by their soldiers dying during the war. And it is true that death was just was an aspect of everyday life. And also, when somebody dies, they're not cordoned off in a hospital. So you're seeing it. You're burying them yourself. You know, there aren't the funeral directors in the same way. So it is part of daily life in a way that it isn't today.
The media is also an interesting exercise in this. I think that the current media is not doing a particularly good job, mass media. But it's striking to look at all the examples in which someone would write a check to the publisher or the editor, and that would be pretty much the coverage for whatever. I mean, and up to and including the consideration of the federal government buying a newspaper during the war, a Southern newspaper, buying it in order to affect opinions during the... It's not quite as bad as it has been. That
how,
part was,
you know,
a little
true.
Surprising.
Nor even in the days when there was such partisan press that you could get entirely different descriptions of an event that took place. Maybe that happens a little bit today, but then when Lincoln would give a speech and his paper would say, they loved him, you know, there was standing ovation, they carried him out in their arms, and then the other press, Douglas's press, the Democratic press, said nobody clapped. You know, it was such a terrible speech. You know, he was a fourth-rate lecturer, so that there wasn't even a pretense of objectivity at that time. And you're right, the government felt that they could buy up a good story. The stories sometimes were allowed to be completely fake, you know, faking lost battles. And so we are better off today than we were then. That's one of the places, I think.
There is room for improvement.
There is, indeed.
When some of those still sound pretty current. Team of Rivals is the book that Doris Kearns Goodwin has given us as a gift of her 10 years of work, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. And then there's all those other guys, too. We trust that you'll be with us when we return in a moment for a little bit more of The Paula Gordon Show.